Well, boys and girls, I've finally sold out and I've got adverts before the theme music. So here it is. Here's the advert. Do you like books? Do you like reading? Do you like reading books? Then why not read a book? Thursday Night's All Right by Jack Andrews. It's full of swearing and general rude stuff, but it's only $3 and it's available on Amazon Kindle. Go and buy a copy today. No one else has. You could be the first.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack. He's an angry elf. I hope you've had a good fortnight. I'm back. It's time for the interactive bit. Here it comes. How you been? Yeah? Have you started your advent calendar? Well, you should have. It's like the 3rd of December. We've got 3 doors to open now. Go and open your advent calendar. And scene. How was that? So, the advert at the start for my book. I just want to say, I have had 3 people download it. Can't lie to you. You know, like this time a month ago, no one had ever downloaded it. A few people had read it, but no one had downloaded it. So I'm kind of touched by that. I'm surprised it's only 3. Someone put a comment on Facebook saying that they want a Kindle for Christmas so they can read the book. You don't need a Kindle. You need the Kindle app if you want to read it. So if you haven't got a Kindle, just get the app on your phone. The app is free, so you can read ebooks and then just go and buy it through Amazon. Not that I'm desperate for you to buy it, but I'm desperate for you to buy it. Not for the money either. I almost considered putting it on there for free, but then I sort of thought, well, do you know what? I worked so hard when I wrote it. It would be nice to get something back for it. It's only $3 or £2.50, I think it comes in at. Anyway, I shouldn't bang on about it, but I thought you'd be interested to know that 3 people, and I know who 2 of them are, I'm not sure who the 3rd person is, but I know who 2 of them are. So yeah, whoever that 3rd person is, thanks very much. You clearly got great taste in literature. So yeah, now I haven't got a massive amount of housekeeping because people have emailed me and I've forgotten what they said. So I just want to mention an email I got from Charlie O'Halloran, and he found out about the podcast because a YouTuber called Jack Mate, I think that's how it's pronounced, he's got a couple of extra A's in there, he was looking for future guests on his podcast and someone recommended me. And just because he read that tweet, Charlie decided to come and have a look at my podcast, which is nice. I never heard anything from Jack Mate. I've heard of him. He's a YouTuber in the UK. Never heard anything. That would have been nice though, you know, getting a bit of exposure, but never mind. But it's nice to have Charlie as a listener, and he wanted me to say hello to his dog. So I'm going to do that now. Are you ready? Here it comes. Molly! Molly! Merry Christmas, Molly. Come here. Who's a good girl? Who's a good girl? You're a good girl, Molly. You're a good girl. Good girl, Molly. Good girl, Molly. Now, I should tell you that Molly is a 13-year-old Irish terrier, and she's only got one eye. And he's put, my parents didn't buy her a Christmas present, which was a lovely winter coat, in 2020, because they were under the impression she wouldn't be alive to use it. Now, 2 years later, she's proven everyone wrong with her kind-hearted spirit. And Charlie says he likes to think she knows how much she means to his family and the happiness that she brings to the world. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that a beautiful thing? She clearly is a special dog. Good work, Molly. I don't think I've got anything else to talk about. Oh, yes, I have. Forgot about this. So I've got a book out. It's called Thursday Night's All Right by Jack Andrews. And it's very funny. I wrote it about 20 years
ago. Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
We're going to start off with Do You Hear What I Hear? With the fantastic Bob Baker. And this is one that I kind of figured was universal, but clearly it's not. Here it is.
I like that as a designated barkeep, I can dispel myths about alcohol. So, for example, a banana is 150 calories and a shot of whiskey is only 80. So you can see that drinking does not make you fat. It makes you lean against the bar, the tables, the other patrons, The Vicar of Dibley is a popular British sitcom that ran on the BBC in the 1990s. It is the story of a female vicar who is assigned to a rural village after the Church of England permits the ordination of women. During the first season, they had a holiday special called The Christmas Lunch Incident. As a vicar, Geraldine Grange, in an effort to befriend the villagers, accepts an invitation to four separate Christmas luncheons. No one wants her to be alone, so she does not have the heart to turn anyone down. The results are funny, and in the end, she is so full she has to be taken home on a bulldozer to sleep it off. This episode is well worth a watch. But for Do You Hear What I Hear, it serves another purpose. In the episode, after two meals, she arrives at the home of her assistant, Alice Tinker. She tells her the story about a vicar who is trying to be kind to her parishioners and accepts three different offers of Christmas lunch. She describes how the first meal is okay, the second is a struggle to get it down, and by the third, she is absolutely stuffed. But at the third home, she says this is where her best friend lives. When she tells her best friend all about the three meals problem, the best friend says she does not need to eat any more food and offers her a cup of tea instead. Alice is entranced with this story, but she says it must be fictional because it is not like their current situation at all. She said that if she had cooked a meal and it turns out that her friend had eaten already and is not hungry, Alice would cry and cry and probably be scarred psychologically for the rest of her life. The vicar responds, with an awkward pause, "Right, well, we'd better tuck in then, eh?" This is memorable dialogue. In fact, even after 25 years, if you go on Etsy, you can get this phrase on a Christmas card, a coaster, or a t-shirt with the vicar stating to tuck in this Christmas. Okay, so I want to, but I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. In the States, if I ask someone to tuck me in, it means that I want him or her to put me into bed and pull the covers around me. I don't think this is exactly what the vicar is asking. Here in America, tuck in means to make someone secure in bed by tucking in the sheets, the covers, and the blankets all tightly around them. It is a means of providing comfort, especially to a young child. I know that in England, this is not what is intended. My suspicion is that tuck in is the American equivalent of dig into, especially with food. Tuck in Britain is to eat well, with enthusiasm, and with a considerable quantity of food. The vicar can attest to that. I suppose that eating can be seen as a form of comfort, so perhaps we can ask our kids for a total Christmas Do You Hear What I Hear crossover event. We want an intercontinental combo of both terms during the holidays. Breakfast in bed, where we are tucked in, per the U.S. definition, and a considerable feast that we can tuck into, via the U.K. interpretation. What better way to celebrate our shared cultural Christmas experience? Cheers and Happy Christmas!
Yeah, I don't know where tuck in came from, but we'll use the word tucker to refer to food, and like tuck is another word for like sweets and stuff. And you had the tuck shop at school where you could buy sweets. That's what they called it, the tuck shop. So yeah, good one though, Bob. Thanks very much. Now it's time for this.
Book review, book review.
Christmas.
Book review.
So boys and girls, I have the king of Christmas podcasts on now. Now, this is Brian Earle. He's the host of the Christmas Past podcast. Do you want to say hello to everyone, Brian?
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
No. Thanks for being on. I'm quite honoured, actually. You've increased the street cred of the podcast tenfold. When I first started thinking about doing a podcast, one of my plans was to do like a history of Father Christmas. And then I was looking for Christmas podcasts around the same time, and I found yours. And the first three episodes talk about the history of Father Christmas, not Father Christmas, Santa Claus, you call him. Mm-hmm. He's the same guy. And that was it. I thought, oh, well, I can't do that now because it's been done. And you did a fine job of it. A fine job.
No, I started the podcast with a pretty simple premise. It was that I had gone looking for a podcast that I wanted to listen to for myself. And when it didn't exist, I said, well, I can't be the only one interested in something like this. Perhaps I'll try creating it myself, put it out there to the world and see what happens. And I never could have imagined the response that I got. What I was looking for was something like, I guess the equivalent would be the BBC over there, but public radio here has, you know, lots of great podcasts where those kind of do a nerdy deep dive on what might feel like a pretty familiar topic. But the idea is that they bring a lot of storytelling and a lot of fascination to it so that there's always little things to surprise and delight you as you're hearing something that you think you've heard before. And I mean, Christmas is something that if you celebrate it, you've always celebrated it, which sounds like a very obvious thing, of course, but you get to a point where you've put a tree in your living room every year since you were been born. And, you know, when you stop to think, well, why do we do that? There is a story there. It happens for a reason. And you've probably heard some of the story, but you certainly haven't heard all of the story. And so I like to dig deep into those things, find experts who can help me tell those stories. And then most importantly, I think kind of the whole idea of the show is that I package that into a very specific storytelling style so that you feel like you're being engaged in a narrative as you're learning too.
Yes, it's very comfortable, your podcast. It's not, mine's a little bit on the other end of the scale, I'd say, whereas yours is one you can just sit and relax and listen to. And I used to listen to podcasts when I'm at work, and I've always found yours really relaxing. It's just, it's like a soothing podcast, but it's also incredibly interesting. I've always been impressed with the amount of people you have on each episode. Mm-hmm. Do you find it, people are very happy to come on and be interviewed?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I was really surprised by that. And I'm also sometimes surprised by the ones that I have a little more trouble with. They're the ones that you wouldn't imagine, that there'd be take a little bit of extra back and forth to get them to come on the show. But I mean, people who, you know, have published things about this or are involved in the space in one way or the other. And by that, I mean, if you listen to the show, the breadth of guests that I've had on. I mean, it's not only historians and biographers, but I've also had the CEO of a candy cane making factory. I've had someone who runs a school for training people to be professional Santa Clauses. I've had actors and dancers and historians of the theater arts. I mean, these are people who just love this stuff and they love to talk about it. So I really have found not only some of the more interesting conversations I've had of my adult life have come through doing this podcast, but I've also just been so gratified by how much of a community there is around sharing our love for Christmas.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. You know, I was surprised actually as well when I first started. I think the first interview I did was with a guy that had made the world's biggest Yule log. I was surprised that he was interested in giving me his time, but he did. And we had a really good chat and he's a really nice guy. And afterwards, I thought, I'll never speak to that chap again. And I wonder if he'll ever think of me and think, well, I wonder what happened to that podcast. I don't imagine he even listened to it. I don't know. Maybe he did. Mm-hmm. I think I sent him an email with the link, but yeah. Anyway, so your podcast has been going, is it the sixth year, I want to say?
This is the sixth year, but that makes it the seventh season, the one coming up just now.
Okay, it's not started yet. Is that right?
We're in the preseason now. I count the season, I guess, along with the majority of Americans who say that the Christmas season is from the day after Thanksgiving until Christmas Day itself. I mean, folks like you and I know that you can start celebrating whenever you like. I kind of ramp up around September. And when I say ramp up, I mean, for me personally, that's when I'll start listening to Christmas music and watching a movie here and there. But that's also when I start trickling out episodes of my podcast. But the core, the main season between Thanksgiving and Christmas are when I tell those stories, the backstories to Christmas traditions. The ones in the preseasons are a bit more like long form interviews. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll narrate some forgotten Christmas stories. Just today, I put out one that was a playlist of new Christmas music from independent musicians, which I think is something really important to do. We return to our favorite Christmas songs every year, but you know, you need to expand your palate every now and then, and you're missing out on a lot of great Christmas music, whether you know it or not. So I'm doing my part to help expose people to things that I think they might like to hear.
So your podcast, you release episodes every 2 or 3 days in the lead up to Christmas. Is that right?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what the season looks like. I mean, these last few years, there's been a comparatively shorter time. And again, I'm looking at this as an American between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I think it won't be for another decade or so where you get the longest time between those two dates. And so how long the Christmas season lasts really dictates to me about how many episodes I can make and then about how I'm going to space them apart. This coming year, for example, episodes will come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Right. So 3 a week. Mm-hmm. And do you record them all, start recording much earlier in the year?
Oh, yeah. And part of the reason for that is I started the podcast in a lot of ways to give myself a Christmassy hobby to have throughout the year. And so it's not that it takes me all year or half a year or whatever, but I just like to let it take me that long because I just have something to keep me engaged. I'll start doing interviews sometime around May, or at least reaching out to people to schedule interviews. And then after I do the record the interview, I kind of let it sit for a while and then I go back. There's a whole multi-step process. Then I need to listen to the interviews and find, well, what are the pieces I want to take out of that? And then I need to sort of write a script around it and figure, well, how am I going to shape this? If you listen to some of these backstory episodes, you realize there's a small handful of little techniques that I use where I usually do an introduction where I'm telling you some anecdote to rope you in. And then after I introduce, I'm Brian Earle, this is Christmas Past, then we sort of go back to the beginning and tell the whole story. In radio speak, this is called an E-shaped story. So if you imagine a lowercase letter E where you're sort of going along in a line and then all of a sudden you loop back to the beginning and swirl around again, I try to follow that. So then after I sort of have the general size and shape of everything, I start figuring out where the music is going to go. Oftentimes, or most of the time, rather, there is some background music, but I also use music as kind of like punctuation. You know, right when I make an interesting point is when I might change the music. I might add little musical breaks. And so once I have all the pieces, this is the fun part. It's that it's almost like composing. I want everything to have a very specific shape. And so that's where writing these kinds of episodes is different from, say, writing a book. Whereas when you're writing for the ear, you can think about like the rhythm of the speech and the melody and the shape of everything, because of what I'm really trying to do is create a listening experience. And so once I've gathered my raw materials, it's how do I shape and form and mold that into the listening experience? And then once I get to that point, I guess right at, we're probably talking around September, I have to let everything sit because an episode of that type isn't complete until someone has sent me a Christmas memory that I can add to the end and set that up and close out the episode after that. And people don't normally start doing that until around now. And so I am just now for the 2022 season at a point where all of my episodes are ready to go. I don't have to do anything except release them starting next Monday. Oh, wow. And I'm often not in that position. I had to be this year for two reasons. Number one is that I had a book come out and I need to have my calendar free for things like this. And then the other reason is, you know, I have a two-year-old son. There have been a couple seasons of Christmas Past where basically after work, you know, my wife and I will have dinner and spend a little bit of time. And then I just come down to the office and work on episodes of the podcast. And as much as I love working on the podcast, I don't want to be working on them in the thick of the Christmas season. I want to be doing Christmassy things. I want to be baking and watching movies during the Christmas season. So I did what I could this year to make sure that everything was ready to go well in advance so that I can relax a bit.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, I haven't. My podcast, I normally sort it all out like 3 days before it goes live, which isn't a wise move, but that's the way I tend to do things. So the reason we're chatting today is because your podcast is so good that it's worth reading rather than just listening to. So the book, just to clarify, I've got this right. It's the episodes you do, which are like, I forget what you call them. The main episodes are called...
Yeah, like the backstories.
Backstory, that's the word. So is that what it is? So it's each part of the book is specific backstories that you've covered over the past. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And, or at least that the episodes that I produced were kind of the first step in creating that material. Because like I said, writing for my episodes, I'm writing for the ear. There's, you know, a lot of incomplete sentences, a lot of alliteration stuff that's, you know, you experience that one way when you're listening to it. If you're reading it on the page, it's annoying, right? So I just want to be really clear that the book is not simply transcribed episodes of my podcast. I mean, it couldn't be. That wouldn't work. When I pitched it to my agent and to the publishers, you know, I said, I want to bring the same wide-eyed fascination and cozy nostalgia. But in order to make this a book worth buying, there had to be lots of visuals, lots of little facts, lots of little sidebars, things like that, so that it's very much a visual experience. The carryover is, again, there's a lot of storytelling. I include a lot of the input that I got from experts in the book. I quote them, as a matter of fact. And even some things that I couldn't get to in the podcast. You know, again, the podcast, it's almost like a 3-minute pop song, what I'm trying to create, right? Like it has to have a shape. And there's plenty of material that I gather when I'm doing the prep for my episodes that I would love to include, but I'm just like, it just doesn't fit. And so I had a lot of outtakes and just extra things that I wanted to cover where the book was the better fit for that kind of stuff. I think one example is one of the first episodes I ever did was about sugar plums. And there's this poem published called The Sugar Plum Tree by this poet in the late 19th century. And, you know, it just wouldn't have fit. It would have felt awkward or would have felt like I was trying to fill some space if I put that in the episode. But it's in the book as this nicely decorated sidebar. So, you know, the book is one of those casual reading kind of books. It's not a cover to cover kind of thing. It's there are 26 chapters. Each 25 of the chapters covers the story behind a Christmas tradition. The 26th chapter is kind of like my predictions about where Christmas is now and where it's heading. But it's the kind of one that you put on your coffee table. You pick it up, you read one chapter while you're having your coffee or your tea, and then, you know, you put it back down and maybe tomorrow you do the same thing or you let a friend borrow it. It's a casual browsing kind of book.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of book that's ideal for Christmas because there's so much going on at Christmas. It's hard to get into like a novel, but it's one of those you can just pick up and just read a segment at a time, you know, before you go to bed, and it keeps you in the festive mood. How did you find writing it? Like, obviously, you had the framework or all the foundations from
the foundation from
your episodes. So then you just had to build on that, I guess.
It was, yeah. So there was a lot of, you know, again, how do you take this from one thing into another, right? Like, it's a different beast. And it's not as though we just like dumped most of the episode transcripts into a word processor and then, you know, went from there. I mean, we're starting from scratch of taking a look at everything that I wanted to cover, everything that I think I could, everything that we could do justice to. Then, you know, when you're doing a podcast, you really have free rein. You can do whatever you want. But then when it comes to working with a publisher, you know, you're getting input in a way that I never had before about, you know, what they need, when they need it by, what should go in, what shouldn't go in. Even the cover of the book that we ended up with was the second or third choice. And that was because there was one working cover, and I've shared images of this on social media, but then, you know, someone from upper management has some arbitrary reason for insisting that they change course, and then all those kinds of things happen. So that whole thing, just like working within this big machine and under a deadline, was something I just never done before. Obviously, I have a deadline for doing my episodes. They need to come out before Christmas. But the timeline for this book was really tight because I got the word from the publisher in October of 2021. And what I thought that meant was that this book would come out in 2023. And even without having published a book before, I had a sense of all the many steps that go into, number one, you write the manuscript, then you work with an editor, and then a copy editor, and then an art director, and then it goes off to be printed, and then proofed, and then that whole thing, and then it goes to a warehouse, and then there's a sales cycle. I was shocked when they said that they wanted to put it out for Christmas of 2022 when they were giving me the notice in October of 2021. And I said, well, the only way that's going to work is if I give you the manuscript in like February. And they said, yeah, that's actually what we're asking of you. And when I pitched the book to publishers, I was saying it was probably going to take me about 6 to 9 months to write. And then here I found myself with about 8 weeks to get the finished manuscript out. And all, of course, again, you know, I got the word in October. And so that was right as I was heading into my busy season for the podcast. And at that time, my son was 1 year old. I was a very busy guy, right? And so trying to get all of that done and have a full-time job and some semblance of a social life, it was challenging, you know, but I think that's kind of what I'm used to. You know, again, I work in Silicon Valley. I've worked in a lot of startups. That whole just crazy time, crazy deadline, crazy project kind of thing is, you know, it has its ups and downs, but I kind of feel like that's what I'm used to. That's where I perform best when there's that kind of frantic pressure. Yeah. So it all worked out.
I just realized, so that it's 25 segments. Is that like, so you can read one a day, like an advent calendar?
I pitched it that's how I described it in my book proposal. I said, it's just like a little advent calendar of a book. It's not meant to be read, you know, read this when there's 25 days till Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
But sure, if you'd like to think of it in that way, then I suppose.
Well, that's how I did when I first came out of my podcast, I figured if I did it fortnightly, there'd be 25 or 26 episodes coming out a year, so people could listen to it one a day in the lead up to Christmas. That was like my original plan. I don't know if anyone ever does do it like that. So share with us your favorite, if you can, or a couple of your favorites, the ones that really stand out to you that you were most interested in when you were writing the book.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes the ones that I think are going to be the most basic are tend to have the most surprises in them. And then ones that I think that I already know much. And so I was like, I will put this together, but I probably won't learn very much, are the ones where there are the most surprises for me. Probably the one that's just nearest and dearest to me is the Santa Claus one, because that was the one that started it all for me. Santa Claus is one of those things where, you know, every time you look under some new corner, you'll find information that you didn't really have before. And I feel like a lot of people who do a bit of research might read the Wikipedia page and realize or come to the conclusion that, oh, you know, Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus, don't you know? Which, of course, is not true. I mean, there is a little bit of truth to it. They certainly contributed a lot to the way that we understand Santa Claus to look like, but they certainly didn't invent the modern Santa Claus. But there's just a lot of really interesting information there. And part of the thing that I try to do with the show is explore hidden connections between things. And so an example I always like to bring up is railway travel, where when rail travel became common in the 19th century, Christmas just became a different thing. All of a sudden, now it was a time for homecomings and family gatherings, things that just wouldn't have been possible for if you moved away from home and you lived in a time before accessible mass transit. You didn't go anywhere. And especially during the winter when there were no roads, obviously no one was driving, stagecoaches weren't really efficient. All of a sudden, Christmas became a different thing because of that. And there are other inventions too, like plate glass, which has been around for a long, long time, but really around the late 19th, early 20th century. All of a sudden, you had toy stores with these big plate glass fronts that had Christmas displays, and Macy's department store in New York City, which was, you had this melding of immigrants coming in, all these immigrant traditions being mixed together and creating this new kind of Christmas that happened to coincide with the building of this major metropolitan area and a new style of shopping, too. So one example, you know, stores like Macy's and Filene's and Wanamaker's, where department store shopping, where you browsed around and picked things up and brought them to a register, that was new. We think of that as so common today, but prior to, you would go into the store and everything was behind the counter. The shopkeeper got you your things. But this thing of like you coming in and browsing and experiencing and being immersed in almost this, like, I'm going to use a very deliberate phrase, this cathedral of commerce. And the reason I call it that is because early Wanamakers were actually modeled after cathedrals. When you walked into the entranceway, the lobby, it was supposed to remind you of a cathedral. And these elaborate window displays were a huge part of what drew people in. And so it's always interesting to think of that. You would never imagine the invention of plate glass being really part of what makes Christmas what it is. And so it's not necessarily any one Christmas tradition itself, but it's those little things underneath the surface that you wouldn't necessarily imagine. And bringing it back to Santa Claus, a lot of the formation of the modern Santa Claus was happening around the late 19th century, arguably starting with the illustrations that Thomas Nast was doing for Harper's Weekly magazine, and really culminating in work that finished around the 1930s in Coca-Cola's depictions of Santa Claus. The Coca-Cola Santa Claus is kind of like that's the point where we stopped iterating. We haven't really evolved the image of Santa Claus beyond that. And so there's that glimmer of truth that Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus. They kind of put the finishing touches on it, but none of that would have been possible without a couple of things, an explosion in print media, right? A way to create images and then spread them really far and wide quickly. And then number two is advances in printing technology like lithography, which helped the Christmas card to become what it became, to allow Coca-Cola to print in full living color and send their Coca-Cola Santa Clauses on billboards and posters and the like all over the place. It's those factors that came into being that sort of merged at just the right time with all kinds of economic and technological and societal changes merging together around the 19th and early 20th century that made Christmas into what it is. And I close the book by saying, okay, Christmas is based on this 2,000-year-old religious story. And for something like that, and a celebration that's filled with a lot of imagery that you assume to be ancient symbolism, it feels like this ancient thing, but it's not. Christmas itself is ancient, but the Christmas we celebrate is really, really new. I'm talking like maybe going as far back as your great, great grandparents. And so here's one example of that. I mean, I'm 48. So my grandfather was born in 1920, my great grandparents in 1900, great, great parents, 1880s. My great, great grandparents were probably among the first Americans to have Christmas trees. That's when all of that started. Probably among the first Americans to have electric lights. So likely among the first Americans to have electric Christmas lights. this isn't ancient history. I mean, I know my great-great-grandparents' names. I have pictures of them. I mean, these are people with pretty close connection to this time in history. So those are it's kind of a non-answer to your question, because is there any one thing? No. And I kind of like it that way, that there's not. It's this huge fabric of stuff that just keeps creating Christmas as we go.
No, I think you did answer my question, actually. You did a fine job. Yeah, very good. Do you know what? Just plug your book then. Tell the listeners what you want them to know and name it so they know what they're looking for.
Sure. Well, the book is Christmas Past, The Fascinating Stories Behind Our Favorite Christmas Traditions. Wherever you buy books, you can almost certainly find it. Or if you need help finding it, you can come to ChristmasPastPodcast.com so you can find more information about the book and everything else. But yeah, the idea is that it's one of these books that you can learn the backstory to a Christmas tradition, almost certainly discover something that you didn't know before. And this is the other thing. I mean, I think my relationship with Christmas, probably like yours too, has changed throughout my life. As a child, it's all about the gifts. When you get older, maybe it's more about like nostalgia or family or things like that. And I kind of feel like as I'm, you know, creeping ever further into middle age, it's more just fascinating. I mean, it's when you look at it, the things that we do, we cut down a tree and put it in our living room. We go door to door. Some of us do singing songs. We have these foods that we only eat for a couple weeks out of the year, and clothes that we put on for only a couple of weeks out of the year. We even change the way we talk. I mean, at least here in the States, where we say Merry Christmas, you never use the word merry otherwise, unless you're talking about a merry-go-round. I mean, that word just doesn't exist except for when it comes to Christmas or, you know, humbug. And one of the interesting things, and I say this at the beginning of the book, is that because Christmas has been around for so long, the Christmas we celebrate now can only really be kind of a curated collection of traditions from different parts of the world, different times in history. We couldn't celebrate at all. It doesn't all fit. We kind of prune things. We get rid of things and we add things. You know, as we get rid of one tradition, the elf on the shelf comes along to take its place. It's this ever flowing and ever evolving kind of thing. And so for every tradition that we honor, there are ones that died out. And those are really fun to look into as well.
There we go. Yeah. So boys and girls, if you want to get a copy, it's very easy to find. Christmas Past,
Fascinating Stories Behind Our Favorite Holidays Traditions.
There we go. By Brian L. Check out a copy. Thanks so much for coming on, Brian. Yeah. And I'll be listening to your podcast when it comes out in December.
Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's time now for the quiz. And if you remember, I offered the old Christmas quiz box to a lucky winner. I asked you to send me an email or drop me a message on Facebook. The girls are going to do the raffle right now. Here it comes. Let's find out who won.
We're putting the names in the hats, and we have 9 names going in. Daddy is annoyed because most of these people live overseas and it will cost him more to post it than it's worth. Juno, put the names in the hat.
I'm putting the names in the hat. I've put them in. Now I'm going to mix them around. And now I'm going to pick one. Now Robin's going to read it.
And the winner is Rachel Paul. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Rachel Paul.
So there we go. Congratulations to Rachel Paul. If I haven't already got hold of you, Rachel, then please email me or drop me a message through Facebook with your address and I'll get it into the post. And hopefully you'll get it before Christmas and you can do your own version of the Christmas quiz. Now it's this episode's version with my book. Here we go. Question number one. In what European language is Joyeux Noel the Christmas greeting? That's probably not how it's meant to be said, actually. So if it's spelt Joyeux, I guess it's Joyeux Noel. I don't know. Question number two. What is the second line of the carol in the bleak midwinter? What was the second line? Tell me. Question number Turkeys are flightless birds. Question, sorry, that's true or false? So are they flightless birds or aren't they? Is it true? Is it false? Question 4. In the pop charts of 1963, actress Dora Bryan sang
All I want for Christmas is a what? What did that girl want for Christmas? What was it? Question whatever. In the Bible, on what animal does it say Mary rode on the journey into Bethlehem? Question number. Which actors play the two dads in the film Jingle All the Way? Okay, easy one. Yeah. Question number something. This is one of those ones where it's like, if I read the first part of the question, it's not Christmassy. Listen to this one. Which man became the 23rd Prime Minister of Canada in 2015? Right, that's the question really. But then it says he was born on Christmas Day, 1971. Does that help? That makes it Christmassy, so it helps me. Okay, question whatever. Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers? That sounds like a fetish, doesn't it? Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers, dirty boy? No, it's actually, complete the title of the song. Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers? And then you've got to complete the song, okay? Right, I made it sound like a true or false question, didn't I? Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers? True or false? Shall we move on to the next one? Okay, in 1647, this is a long one actually, I'll take a deep breath. In 1647, a destructive game of football followed by a mass brawl in Canterbury in protest against the Puritans' attempts to cancel Christmas led to a royalist revolt throughout Kent and the second round of the Civil War. What name was given to these riots? And the final question, which former Straubs and Yes keyboard player began a solo tour on the 28th of November 21 entitled The Not Quite As Grumpy As Last Christmas Tour, and the 2022's tour is called Grumpy Christmas Stocking Tour? There we go. That was your 10 questions. Now here comes your 10 songs. Ready? I don't care. That's all you're getting. Number two. That's all we need. That's more than enough. More than enough. Next one. Number four. And finally. There we go. That's the questions. Now here come the answers. Boys and girls, to answer the questions, that you get a chance to compete now against a Christmas master, and that is Scott Newman, our US correspondent and also the host of Tinsel Tunes and the Christmas Morning Podcast. How you doing, Scott?
Good. Thanks for having me on here. I think everybody's going to feel better about themselves after they hear my answers.
Okay. That's nice. That's good.
Yeah, I'm never really good at these things, though, Jack.
Are you not normally?
Well, no. I usually get a couple, and then I feel really good about myself, and then the whole thing just starts falling apart. And then when we get to your humming...
Don't diss the humming.
The wheels fall off the bus there.
Do not diss the humming.
Okay.
Okay. Question number one. In what European language is joyous Noël, the Christmas greeting?
That would be France.
Easy.
Yeah.
Well done.
Je parle français un peu.
Ooh. Muy bueno.
Nope.
Okay. Question number two. What is the second line of the carol, In the Bleak Midwinter?
See, when you started this, I thought for sure I was going to know it because I said, oh, I know In the Bleak Midwinter. And then I went to that portion of my brain where that would be stored, and there's nothing there. It's like something cold and dark or something. I don't know.
That's correct. The answer is something cold and dark. It goes, in the bleak midwinter, something cold or dark or something.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Actually, no. Oh, sorry, I got that wrong. No, it's actually, frosty wind may moan. I wouldn't have got that either.
No, okay. So, that was a hard one. Okay. So we're one for two so far. All right.
Number three. Oh, someone's paying attention. I'm glad you are.
I wrote them all down here. I'm trying to bring your show up here.
It's a mammoth task, mate. It's a Herculean task. Okay. True or false? Turkeys are flightless birds.
I believe that's true.
And I believe it's false. And I can tell you a little story about this. This is a Christmas story. Okay. I'd spent a Christmas in New Zealand. And when I used to drive to work, sometimes we'd see wild turkeys by the side of the road. And we were chatting amongst ourselves in this hostel, a lot of people that were backpackers. And I said, we could go out and catch a turkey. They can't fly. We'll just go and grab one, bring it back here, feed it up. We had about a month. We'll feed it up and we can eat it for our Christmas dinner. And everyone was like, yeah, we'll do that. So one Sunday we went out, drove on the same route to work. There's this field by the side of the road and there's a lot of turkeys. And they're like, right. We jumped out of the car. I ran down the hill chasing this turkey and the turkey flew off. And it just flew. And it didn't fly far. And it actually says in the answer, it says wild turkeys can fly for short distances. And do you know what happened, though? There was a baby one there. And
oh,
I caught that.
I don't like where this story's going.
Yeah, I know. Well, I caught the baby one and I had it. And my mates were like, you're going to have to let that go. And I was like, yeah. And we let it go and it ran off back to his mummy.
Okay, good. You did the right thing there. So were you standing there gobsmacked when you saw the turkey fly away and you were like, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't know they did that.
My mates were at the top of the hill just crying with laughter, rolling around while I was pegging it down the hill. Because it was all my idea. You know, I was like, you drive down, I'll jump, I'll get this turkey. I'm not, you know. And they were just, yeah, just watching me run off to this turkey that just flew off. It was, yeah. Great days.
Yeah, go for the emu next time.
Well, they're fine.
All right, next one.
You don't get them in New Zealand, but nonetheless.
Close enough.
Question number something. In the pop charts of 1963, actress Dora Bryan sang All I Want for Christmas is a what?
I felt like the answer to this song was like a man or a boyfriend or a husband.
Yeah, it's one of only four men, though. Does that give you a clue?
No. It doesn't.
There's only one of these four men. Two of them have died. There's two of them left. They're fabulous.
Thunderbirds? I don't know.
The Fab Four.
Oh, a Beatle?
Yeah, All I Want for Christmas is a Beatle.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not familiar with that song?
No, I've never heard that before.
You must have heard something, though, to ring that bell. Because it's sort of, when I read the question, it's sort of, I didn't get the answer, but I sort of thought,
There is some obscure Christmas song that's like, All I Want for Christmas is a Man. I don't remember what it is. It might have been, I think, when I did a funk Christmas songs episode for Jingle Jank, I feel like it might have been in there, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Question number... in the Bible...
Five.
On what animal...
The answer we're looking for is five.
Oh, you're not getting a point for that, but well done.
Okay.
In the Bible, on what animal does it say Mary rode on the journey to Bethlehem?
I am not a biblical scholar, and unless you're trying to trick me, I think the answer is a donkey.
Do you know what? I'm not trying to trick you, but the book is, because it does not say... So there you go.
Oh, is this one of those Mandela effect things? We all think it's a donkey, but it's actually never specified.
I know. Yeah, in the song. It's like the wise men. You see, everyone thinks there's three wise men, but that doesn't say how many wise men there were.
Well, wait, if it doesn't say, then isn't any answer correct?
Obviously not. Because the answer is, in the Bible, what does it say?
And the answer would be, it doesn't. That's the answer?
That is the answer, yeah.
I don't like that one bit. I was trying to get an extra point. Listen, I am one for five here, Jack, okay?
Is that what you scored?
I need everything I can get, so... All right, keep going. Okay, I think it's going to get better. Second half is looking really promising.
You can pull it back. Okay, question number six in that case. Okay, so which actors play the two dads in the film Jingle All the Way?
Okay, one of them is Sinbad.
Yep.
And I thought the first one was Tim Allen, but I'm messing that up with, you know, whatever those other Tim Allen movies are. It's Arnold. Isn't it Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes, there you go. All right. See?
Thank goodness.
Done.
Okay. Woo. Saved myself from a blowout here. Okay, keep going.
Okay, question number, I think, is seven now. Who became the 23rd Prime Minister of Canada in 2015 was born on Christmas Day, 1971?
I hope it's Justin Trudeau.
It is Justin Trudeau.
Good.
Well done.
I didn't know that. The only PM of Canada that I would know.
Okay, question number eight. Complete the title of the song. Does Santa Claus sleep with his whiskers?
I have no idea. Tied?
That's not bad. Over or under the sheet?
Oh my gosh, no. I would have never gotten that one. Nobody got that one. If you got that one, write in.
I wouldn't have got that, right, but when I read the answer, I was like, oh, that rings a bell. Does that not even ring a bell with you?
No, it doesn't even ring a bell.
I don't know who sung the song.
That's got to be a British thing, because we wouldn't say whiskers over the sheet, we would say beard over the sheet.
You guys say whiskers.
No, whiskers is what I have right here, like this like extended 5 o'clock shadow, but even just a little bit longer, it'd be like 2 or 3 days growth. Stubble. I would call that whiskers. We don't call beards or mustaches whiskers.
Well, we don't call them whiskers. I don't know. I think people in the States call them whiskers.
Oh, okay, I'll take it up with Merriam-Webster. Keep going.
No, I'm a U.S. correspondent on the show, gosh. Aren't I?
You could be the British correspondent on the Christmas Morning podcast right in after you listen for the first time. Go ahead.
I've listened to your crappy show.
Can I listen to your crappy show, my friend?
Yeah, but mine's crappier. Mm. Right, question number 9. In 1647, a destructive game of football, which is rare for there to be like riots after a football match in the UK, followed by a mass brawl in Canterbury in protest against the Puritans' attempts to cancel Christmas, led to a royalist revolt throughout Kent and the second round of the Civil War. What name was given to these riots?
I have no idea.
Right, it's such a good name. It was the Plum Pudding Riots.
Oh my gosh, no.
That's a riot you want to be part of. I'm not a fan of riots as it goes, but if someone said, do you want to join in the Plum Pudding Riots? I'd be like, oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it sounds like everybody gets a plum pudding for participating.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think they did.
No, they probably didn't.
What kind of riot is that?
It was poorly named. All right, let's see. One, two,
poorly named riot. What poorly named riot?
I'm 3 for 9 here.
Okay, right, last one.
Last one. The best I'll be able to do is 40% if I get this last one right.
Well, you still got the humming round. You're favorite round.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see how that goes.
Okay, which former Storms and Yes keyboard player began a solo tour on the 28th of November 2021 entitled The Not Quite As Grumpy As Last Christmas Tour, and his 2022 tour is called Grumpy Christmas Stocking Tour?
I have absolutely no idea.
I think if you know the keyboard player from Yes and the Straubs.
Well, if I knew the keyboard player from Yes, I would have had the question right. I don't know the keyboard player from Yes.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay. Well, it was Rick Wakeman. You've heard of Rick Wakeman?
No.
Have you not?
No. I've heard of Rick Astley, but I never heard of Rick Wakeboarder or whatever his name is. No.
No, yeah, Rick Wakeman. He was the keyboard singer in Yes.
I heard something about that. Yeah. all right. So I'm 3 for 10 on the primary question. A terrible showing.
Yeah, they're not easy questions, actually. I don't know how many I would have got out of that. But it'd be interesting to see how everyone else does. Right, let's do the humming round. Just five for these. Did you get the first one?
No idea.
That's the tune that we sing Little Town of Bethlehem to. Do you want to hear it again?
Not particularly, no.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleepless.
Okay, this is what you were saying, that the tune is slightly different in the British version.
Yeah, do you know the only reason I know that is because of the Christmas Alphabet podcast with Wayne.
Now that's a good British podcast right there. That is some quality stuff.
As British podcasts go, that is good. Merry Britsmas as well. You should listen to that one.
Oh, I've listened to that one all the time. When I run out of those, I start pulling up your show.
Okay, next.
Okay,
do you want to sing your version of Little Town of Bethlehem?
It goes, oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. That's the way we know it.
I think I've heard Elvis do that, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, right. Number two. What did you get for number two?
It was Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I knew that one.
Yes. All right. There you go, because I hummed it really well.
Yeah.
Okay, question number three.
Frosty the Snowman.
Question number four.
Is a song called Happy Holidays?
Happy Holidays.
May the merry bells keep
ringing.
Ringing. I'm not sure. Okay, I got it.
Ringing and bringing. They're doing them both.
They're doing both.
They're multitasking.
Happy holidays to you. Yes. And the last one was Mary's Boy Child, one of my all-time favorite songs, at least the Boney M. version. There's a...
Oh, was it?
Yeah, there's another version that came out in the 50s. I don't... It wasn't Harry Simeone. It was...
Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte. Okay. That one's fine. But there's something about that Boney M. one that I just absolutely love. I used to work with a guy that was from South Africa, and he's like, this is my favorite Christmas song. And, you know, tell me about how big it is over there. And I don't know, it's a banger. It's got that reggae feel to it. It's got the steel drum kind of thing. Love it. Rest of the album, not so much.
Do you know, that song is, or it used to be, I don't know if it still is, it was one of the top 10 best-selling singles of all time in the UK.
Really?
Yeah, and Boney M. actually had two top 10 songs in the all-time best-selling single. Brown Girl in the Ring, was it? By the Rivers of Babylon, I think. Yeah.
Huh. No, I'm not familiar with that one. I've got an album, but I don't think I listen very much past Mary's Boy Child.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Okay, so let me total up my scores here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 15. So I'm less than 50%. Not a good showing.
Do you know what, Scott? Seeing you is always a good showing.
That is very true. It's my presence that really brings everything up here.
It is. It's been nice having you here.
Oh, it's been so much fun, Jack. Thank you for doing this. Usually, I kind of start tuning out of your quiz halfway through, you know, because interesting things are happening outside or maybe the cat walks in. But this time, I had to pay attention to the whole thing. And I even had the answers written down here. So I'm going to have to start paying more attention to your show, I think, is the takeaway for me. I enjoyed this.
Well, that should be the takeaway for everyone.
Yeah.
I know you've plugged your podcast's last episode. Do you want to do it again this episode?
Yeah, listen to Christmas Morning Podcast.
Well, when this comes out, mm-hmm. I believe you'll be recording, or you'll be releasing Christmas Morning every day now. So tell us about it.
So as of Thanksgiving, which right now is in the future, but maybe when you're listening to this is in the past, we'll be doing daily episodes through Christmas. So every day we read how many days there are until Christmas. We read any Christmas news. We tell a Christmas joke, which is a segment I stole from your show, but I gave you full credit for it when I began stealing.
Yeah, when you began stealing it. I don't get any credit now, do I?
Yeah. We read all the Christmas TV specials and movies that are on TV for that night. So it's a kind of a Christmas morning show, like you might have on the radio, but we would love to have you over there. It's so much fun. And then after Christmas, we'll go back to weekly. And we'll resume our Christmas music song battles that we do every week at that point.
Well, it's a great way. It's like an advent calendar, your show is.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great way.
I listened last year every episode and I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Good. Well, I hope you listen this year.
Well, thanks for coming on again, Scott, and embarrassing yourself. Maybe next time you come on, you'll be able to do it.
Hey, listen, if you ever need somebody to come on and look foolish, I'm always your man and I'm happy to be here. Thanks all you Christmas totalers. And I will see you the next time I'm on the show.
Thanks again, Scott. Now, boys and girls, Bob's back and he's going to talk to us about some fantastic things you can get involved with this Christmas. Here he comes.
The time is here. It feels just right. No need to stress or to be uptight. So while caroling door to door may have passed out of fashion in the States, self-appointed mom of the podcast, Mary Pulte, has identified one place where it is still safe to sing publicly, the zoo. Animals are great because they pay no attention to your warbling, and they don't talk back. In addition, you'll usually find yourself in some enchanting surroundings. Being in the zoo after dark provides a totally different encounter than what you see during the day. Most local zoos have come to recognize that despite the chilly weather, they can still be destinations for family fun in the wintertime. The animals tend to be much more alert than in the sweltering summer months, and you'll usually get some playful activity, especially from the featured reindeer. These parks will have bonfires to serve up s'mores and thaw out those cold fingers. Plus, they are lit up with miles and millions of lights, in tunnels, in mazes, on trains, and in the outline of giant animal figures, like penguins, flamingos, and polar bears. Some zoos enhance the visit with parades, live music, carnival rides, ice skating, and plenty of warm beverages, like hot chocolate and apple cider. They will also feature dressed-up animal characters in Santa and Mrs. Claus for photo opportunities. You can find these colorful events everywhere in the U.S., from the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., to both coasts and most of the states in between. Some will only offer these events as a drive-through safari, which won't let you get close to the critters, but still makes for a fun and exciting outing. Now, what better option to enjoy Christmas lights in the U.K. than with a panoramic view from up above? People often overlook the fact that rooftop bars and restaurants are not just for the summer. Some stay open during the winter while still offering their incredible views. These spaces are magically transformed in a Yuletide makeover to dress up for the season. They are converted from garden terraces into luxurious winter chalets, complete with Christmas trees, teepees, wool blankets, and outdoor heaters. Some have igloos that are decked out with furniture, sheepskin rugs, speakers, and a mini fireplace, so that you can enjoy the feeling of being outside while staying warm and protected from the winter chill. Many will sport elaborate holiday decorations and even live DJs. So they're not only fun, but trendy. You can even find some of these high-up hideaways with mini ice skating rinks, fire pits, snow machines, and all accompanied by hot wintry cocktails, warmed mulled wine, spiced ciders, roasted chestnuts, and sizzling fondue. These venues will offer indoor seating, but please ask for the outdoor, as drinking and eating in the cold while all bundled up is an exhilarating experience, especially surrounded by twinkling fairy lights, festive foliage, holiday decor, and a comfy, elevated environment. You can find at least one of these outdoor establishments in most English cities, obviously in London, but in other urban areas as well. Now, on the other side of the world, listener Katie Gibson introduces us to another captivating Australian tradition that is quite different than anything we find in our colder northern climate. Given the fact that Christmas falls in the middle of the summer, and few countries are as sailing obsessed as the Aussies, it is not surprising that watching a yacht race is a popular Christmas Boxing Day tradition. So after the excitement of the holiday festivities, many Australians want to relax in front of the TV to watch the Rolex Sydney to Hobart yacht race, which starts on December 26th and ends on December 31st, just in time for your New Year's celebration. More than 400,000 spectators will gather on the waterfront or on clifftops or line the harbor in Sydney to watch the spectacular start to this regatta. Thousands more will sail in their own boats to watch as the fleet of yachts cross the starting line. This race has been taking place for more than 70 years, and it is a legendary contest. Competitors race for more than 600 nautical miles, navigating harbors, rivers, bays, and the Tasman Sea. It is considered to be one of the world's most grueling ocean races and an iconic sporting event. This is an absolutely unique Australian experience. We are down to weeks. The joy will build. Preserve this time and be fulfilled.
Okay, boys and girls, next up we got... Oh, hello. I'm getting a call through Skype. Do people still use Skype? Hello?
Hey, Jack. George Podcast here, inventor of the podcast. We've been running some focus groups as of late, and we have pinpointed some topics and trends that we think, if incorporated into your show, would almost certainly improve your numbers. Interested?
No, not really. I've already got four listeners. I sort of think that's enough.
Awesome. So first off, our focus group reacted very favorably to the idea of you talking much more about this new fad called Christmas.
Christmas?
Yeah, the holiday.
Well, just Christmas.
Yeah. If you talk more about Christmas.
You want me to talk about Christmas on my show?
Yeah.
On my
What's your show called again?
It's called the Total Christmas Podcast.
Total?
Christmas Podcast.
Oh, okay, so you got it covered.
I do tend to touch upon Christmas occasionally, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so anyway, the moms in our focus group really want to hear about your, quote, top 10 mulled wine recipes for kids.
Sorry, for kids? How old are these kids?
Yeah. The kid is probably, I don't know the scientific definition, but I would say from like 5 to definitely before legal drinking age.
Yeah, that's not something I'm going to do on my show. I wouldn't say it's a family show, but I'm not encouraging underage drinking. I've got young kids, to be honest. This is George. Is that your real name, George Podcast?
Awesome. So we look forward to hearing that on the show next week. Another topic of interest to our group is holly that looks edible, but like, it's not.
So it's just holly?
Yeah, but it, like, looks edible, but like it's
not? Yeah,
that's
holly. Holly looks edible. That doesn't really look edible, but it's not. What is this?
It's just something that the focus... You know, I don't actually make these. I run the groups. the people are in the groups and they sort of...
Who's in these groups? Mental patients? What is this? I'm recording right now. If you've got anything, other suggestions that might actually work, I'll consider them. But otherwise, can we go?
Okay. All right. I got one last one. And I think this one is a hit. Okay. So a man in our focus group would love to hear your answer to his question, quote, should I buy another tree skirt to wrap around the base of my toilet to absorb the near constant overflows?
Well, yes, please do.
But in the show, he's not listening right now.
But I'm recording the show right now.
I'm on the show.
Yeah, but this isn't ideal, but yes, you are. Can you just, no, this is, I'm gonna have to end this call. I'm sorry. Or can I just go? I don't want to be rude, but yeah. I'm hanging up. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Bye.
Can I
Okay, boys and girls, it's wet pants time. It's the joke. Here it comes. What did one snowman say to the other snowman? Can you smell carrots? Get it? Get it? Because his nose is a carrot. And he's... You get it. You don't need me to explain it. There you go. It's a good joke. You loved it. Pretend you loved it. You hated it, didn't you?
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
So, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol, I've got someone else involved to help me with it. Two things. He had a really bad sore throat and he managed to get his way through it. But also, the line wasn't the best because it's a Zoom conversation. You'll notice his sound isn't the best. But we had a great chat and I hope you enjoy it. Here it comes. Boys and girls, for this episode's version of A Christmas Carol, I've got a special guest who's going to talk about it with me. You might remember him from last year. He came on and talked about his book. This is Ed Daly. Say hello, Ed.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I said say hello.
Hello.
You had one line, Ed, and you blew it. You're off. You're off the show. I'll do it myself. Actually, I can't do it myself. I want to do it myself. I don't want you around making my front room filthy. I can't do it because the one we're talking about is a TV show that I've never heard of. But it turns out that Ed is an expert on this show. That's not strictly true. It might be true, actually. We'll find out. The show is... What's it called, Ed?
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of... Cincinnati, Cincinnati, WKRP.
It was yeah, so about a fictional radio station in Ohio in the late 70s.
And early 80s, I think, wasn't it?
Late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
Yeah, it ran for four seasons. I think you're right. It started in 78 or 79, finished in 82. And it was about a failing radio station, and a chap, Andy Travis, was called in. I think the general storyline was to try and turn things around for the station. Is that right? That's what I read on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I think it used to be easy listening, and they switched it over to rock and roll or something like that.
So you read Wikipedia as well, then?
No, I just remember the show.
Is this true? You do? You do remember it?
I didn't have cable when I was a kid, and so all I had were the reruns that they would show, and this was one of five, six shows that were heavily in rotation in reruns when I was 10, 11 years old.
This made out really well in reruns, didn't it? Because, again, going back to Wikipedia, when it was first shown, it was doing okay-ish in the ratings, but then they cancelled it. But then when they started repeating it, it got that popular that it was actually getting more viewers for the repeats than it was the first time around. And everyone started to love it. And then they tried to bring it back again in the early 90s. Did you ever watch any of that, Ed?
Probably not. They just had one or two of the original cast.
That's it. Yeah, there's just a few of them. I think three, maybe. Yeah.
But the members of the cast that, when I was about 15 years old, wanted to see, they were now part of the remake, so I didn't watch it.
Yeah, that's it. I think, yeah, they sort of took the dregs and tried to remake it. That's rude, isn't it? They were great actors, all of them. So this episode is called Bar Humbug. So, yeah, we'll just run through how it went then. So it starts off, all the staff are in the bullpen, as they call it, talking about not getting their Christmas bonuses. Do you want to touch upon this? Is that a big thing for you, Ed? Christmas bonuses? That seems to be a theme. Obviously, like in The Simpsons and, of course, Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, I think that bonuses are probably less and less of a thing.
Okay.
Because they've cut they've cut everything. I think back in the day, it was a standard thing. And then as they go, just like different pensions, there used to be much bigger pensions, funds for jobs, and they've cut things back over the years. But back then, I think it was a pretty big thing.
Okay. Okay.
To get an extra check at Christmas time.
So in the show, they're all talking about what they want. Now, I want to sort of run through the characters now, I guess, is the best time to do it. So we've got Bailey.
Bailey Quarters.
Well done, Bailey Quarters. Yeah, you did watch it. I shouldn't start with Val. I should start with Herb Tarlek. Right. Yeah. So he wants his bonus so his daughter can get braces because he's complaining about how bad her teeth are. He's worried that she's never going to get married because she's going to be so ugly, which is nice.
He's kind of the smarmy, advertising sales guy.
That's it. Yeah. He's a sales guy. Yeah. Then you've got Venus Flytrap, played by Tim Reed. What's his deal? What sort of music does he play? Is it something special?
I think he's like kind of the funk, late 70s funk DJ. He and Johnny Fever were like the two main DJs.
And he wants the money so he can buy a colour TV for his grandmother. He was also in Sister Sister. Did you ever watch Sister Sister?
I was aware of it, but not... I didn't watch that show. I think he was on a couple shows that I didn't watch. I mean, he's probably in his 70s now, but he had a pretty successful... He was on TV, like, you know how you would have a new show and it would premiere and you might not watch it and it gets canceled? He was on a ton of those shows over the years that I would just... I was just aware that he existed outside of WKRP.
I think this was his peak, to be honest. I think, to be honest, for nearly all of the actors on this, it was their peak, really. He was also, you know, he's got 76 credits on IMDb, and 7 of those are Christmas movies. And they're not the good ones, either. One of them I actually watched years ago called The Rooftop Christmas Tree. It was about a man who had a... He was this old guy who had a Christmas tree on his roof, and they kept telling him to take it down, but he wanted to keep it up every year in case his son came back. Watched that years... Probably about 8 years ago, yeah. It was naff. Anyway, where was I? You've also got Dr. Johnny Fever. He's like the really cool morning DJ, and he is played by Howard Hessman. And I knew him from... Is it Top of the Class or Head of the Class?
Head of the class.
He
was the star of that show.
Yeah. I loved that show. That one, I know that made it over to the UK. And I used to watch it a lot. I was a big fan of that. That's what made Robin Givens famous, wasn't it? Sadly, he only passed away this year, January 2022. Yeah. Herb, we mentioned earlier, he passed away in 21, so only last year. Because they're getting old, I guess. It was a long time ago, this show. So then Andy Travers comes in. He's played by Gary Sandy. Everyone's saying to him, are we going to get a bonus or not? And he doesn't think they are. And he's sort of saying, look, it's not down to the boss. It's down to the boss's mum, who I think you see her occasionally in the show, not in this episode, he refers to as Genghis Khan. Is that right?
Yes. They say, how would you like it if your mom was Genghis Khan? And then Mr. Carlson walks in the room and says, whose mom is Genghis Khan? And they're like,
Me. So the boss comes in, and that's Arthur Coulson, played by Gordon Jump. I'll tell you what's interesting. I thought he looked a lot like Potter out of It's a Wonderful Life.
Lionel Barrymore.
Yeah. And he plays the bad guy in this. He plays like the Scrooge character. And old Potter, whose name... Did you say his name? I've forgotten it.
Lionel Barrymore.
That's it, Lionel Barrymore. Yeah, he played Scrooge on the radio a lot of times. I covered that last year somewhere. He looks a lot like him, but his character's a lot nicer, I think, a lot friendlier.
So tonally, where this tonally versus the rest of WKRP, he was not a mean boss. Right. They kind of straddled the line in this show to make him seem like, well, he's cracking down. He doesn't realize what the bonuses mean. He was just a bumbling fool for a boss.
Okay.
But they needed their Scrooge character, so they referred to his mother, but really they were making him cut back on the bonuses when the rest of the show, Mr. Carlson would have probably given in. He was nice. He was a dope, though. He was an idiot.
Yeah. Do you know what? This is the only episode I've ever seen, and I sort of got that idea that he seemed like a nice guy, but but I guess if you've only seen this episode, it gives you the wrong idea about him a bit. Have I covered everyone? Oh, and then...
Jennifer.
Yeah, we don't meet her yet, though, do we? So,
oh, right.
The boss comes in, and he has one of Johnny Fever's... They're having the Christmas party. Should have mentioned that. They're all talking about the Christmas party. Johnny Fever's brought some brownies in, and no one wants any because they think Johnny might have added a secret ingredient. But the boss, Arthur Coulson, he takes one and eats that, and then he goes in his office and he starts writing a speech about why no one can have bonuses this year. And then he falls asleep. And then that's when the magic
quickly
happens. Sorry?
When they have a 22-minute airtime to make everything go quickly, he takes a bite of the brownie and he's out within 30 seconds.
Like a shot, yeah, that's it, yeah. So then his granddad turns up, and his granddad was the one that started the station, and his granddad's saying, don't end up like me, don't be a bad boss, you're going to be visited by three ghosts. I like the bit where he says, is this that Charles Dickens kind of thing? And he's like, yeah.
Wait a minute. This isn't going to be another one of those Charles Dickens Christmas Carol things, is it? Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
And then we meet Jennifer. Jennifer, played by Lonnie? How would you say it?
Lonnie Anderson. Lonnie Anderson.
She was a bright spark, isn't she, eh? In the darkness?
Yeah, she was the big deal. There was a little bit of a Marianne and Ginger thing with her and Bailey Quarters, as Bailey Quarters was the underrated attractive woman on the show, but Lonnie Anderson was on magazine covers. She was a big deal, and then she married Burt Reynolds. That was her.
Exactly, yeah. They were in some film together, and I can't remember what it's called. I might put it in here.
Stroker Ace.
Did I say what it was just then? If I just said what it was then, I edited it in. If I didn't say what it was, I forgot. Yes. And she's got hair made of acrylic, I think, because I've no idea what else it could be. It positively glows, shines. Yeah, it's incredible hair. It's so much, so bouffant. It's massive of its time.
It's like a helmet. It's like a helmet.
Yeah, and her head's somewhere in the middle of it. You can see this little head in the middle, and so many teeth. She's got such a broad smile. It's interesting, because she is a very beautiful... Actually, no, we're not going to go into that. I spend too much time talking about how much I fancy the women in different things, so we'll forget that bit. So she just comes in to check on him, and he's sound asleep, but then it cuts back to him again, and he's talking to his granddad. Pretty much his granddad says three ghosts are going to turn up, and then he disappears, and he goes running out of his office to speak to Jennifer. And who should be stood there but Jennifer? I mean, it's not Jennifer. Who is it?
She's the ghost of Christmas past, but she's a glowing version of a woman who already has glowing hair.
Well, yeah, but this is interesting, because her hair's actually down a lot longer and a lot, it hangs down. So it looks so much nicer. She looks, and also her top is so much more low cut, which I really appreciated. Yeah, and so she takes him back in time to, I'm guessing that only one of the actors in this were actors that we should recognize. Is that right? Because I didn't recognize.
I think
it was just
Gordon Jump doing a bad acting job, trying to play a younger version, but his voice is cracking like he's 12.
So two of them. So it was, but it also Les Hessman, who I forgot to mention actually, that was played by Richard Sanders. He's still alive. He's 82, I think.
Which is shocking, because that would mean he was like 40 when this was made. He seemed about 68 in that show.
Hang on, wait a second. I've got to look that up now. Made a fool of myself. Yeah, he's 82. Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Which, that is insane, because that means he was the same age as Johnny Fever, I think, because he would have been 81 when he cocked it, I think. Right, now I've forgotten where we were. Oh, yeah. So you've got a young version of Gordon Jump, did you say his name was?
Mr. Carlson.
That's
actor,
right,
Gordon
Jump. The boss, when he first starts working there, and do they mention that it's his mum that owns the radio station? Yeah, they do.
They had mentioned it when they were talking about his mom was Genghis Khan.
No, do they mention it when they're talking in the past? I think they
do. I don't know.
Oh, no, but he's got to edit all this out, Ed. What have you done to my show? Right, where was I? I'm not going to edit that out. I want people to know the truth about us. So then, we see a young Les Hessman, and he's got more hair.
Hessman. Howard Hessman, Les Nessman.
Oh, I see. You're correcting me on my show. Thanks. That's what we need. Making the host look like a dink. Now I've forgotten where I was again, Ed. You come on my show. Do you know what? Normally when I do a version of a Christmas Carol, it is like a well-oiled machine, and then you come on here throwing a spanner in the works.
I'm sand in the machine.
You're not earning your keep. Right, now I've forgotten what's... Oh, yeah, so the point is, the boss comes in and he's giving everyone lovely presents, like cigars and a black dress for the old lady that works there, a black nightgown. I've got to say, if it didn't have the laugh track, I wouldn't know when I was supposed to laugh.
Yeah, this part wasn't funny, but
Not any of it. I didn't laugh. There was one bit that made me laugh, I think, or maybe two. Did
Johnny
you laugh?
Fever
were you rolling
brownies?
Around laughing when you were watching this, Ed? Tell me the truth.
No, but Johnny Fever is a funny character with
He's
his
cool,
brownies.
Yeah. He wasn't in it enough, really, was he? It's a problem.
No. But this was like the Fezziwig character.
Yes, that's the idea. So this is like Fezziwig's Christmas party. He's given out presents to everyone, and then he gives everyone a massive bonus. And then we find out, because he gave everyone a massive bonus, Arthur's mother sacked him. And that was that for him, I guess. That's pretty much it for the Ghost of Christmas Past. And we're going to miss Lonnie Anderson in a low-cut dress. So now we get Tim Reed, Venus Flytrap. He's playing the Ghost of Christmas Present. And this scene, there wasn't a lot to it, I didn't think. It's pretty much everyone's whinging that they didn't get their bonuses. Is that it?
It was sort of a repeat of the first scene.
Yeah, exactly. So they're literally, they are just complaining about the fact, before they were complaining that they didn't think they were going to get a bonus, now they're complaining because they didn't get a bonus. And I think this is the point where Herb says that his daughter's going to have to go into a convent because no one's going to marry her. I don't think he said that earlier. I think he said it now. And that's it, really, for the Ghost of Christmas Present. But like you said earlier, they've only got 22 minutes. They've got to squeeze it in. And I've got to say, so with the Ghost of Christmas Past, she's wearing like a long white dress. Not that dissimilar to what she was wearing anyway, but this is more sort of more of a flowing gown. And she's got like a crown on her head. Venus Flytrap, as a Ghost of Christmas Present, he's decked out in like a proper Christmas robe, like a Santa robe, but like a long flowing one rather than just a two-piece suit. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, Johnny Fever, wearing his usual clothes. They've done nothing with him.
Yeah, that's true. Christmas Present had a very traditional outfit, but Johnny Fever just rolled up like he was the DJ again.
I think the only difference I noticed was he had a black mug. That was, and possibly they might have whited his face a little bit to make him look a bit more ghostly. I'm not 100% sure. It did look a little bit more, I thought. But it's hard to tell because he's wearing sunglasses anyway. So he takes him to the future, but it's not actually, oh, mind you, in A Christmas Carol, it's not Scrooge's future, is it? We don't see Scrooge in the future. And in this one, you don't see Arthur's future. And they've got a new set, which I thought was quite impressive because the rest of it's filmed in like two sets, his office and the bullpen, and this one is like in the future. It's just a big white room or corridor, and all the other employees have been sacked, and we're left with Herb on his own with an automated desk that does all the work of all the others. And what's he doing at his desk there, Edward?
What's the future bullpen, right?
That's, yeah, what's Herb doing at his desk?
Programming?
No,
I don't know.
What were you doing when this Zoom call started, Ed?
I was thinking about the Ghost of Christmas Past.
You were watching pornography. And that's exactly what Herb was doing. He was he's looking at a porn mag, which I thought was quite interesting.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He had the magazine and the sitcom trope where they tilt their heads sideways when they look at the magazine.
Exactly. Yeah, just like you were doing when this Zoom call started. And is it on the magazine? It says "Girls You'd Like to See." I think that's what it says,
right.
Something like that. "Girls You Want to See." Yeah, and which is interesting because in the future they haven't got internet porn, or in their future it's still got the old mags. And he seemed to be enjoying himself. And then he goes home, and that's pretty much it. And as he's leaving, he's sort of talking to himself, and he says, "Oh, Merry Christmas," or something. And that's it. That's the only way we know that this is Christmas future, because he's working on his own at Christmas.
It's just a lonely existence.
That's it. Yeah. So then this was the bit that I liked, actually. This is the one bit that I found funny. Arthur starts crying, a Scrooge character, and he's hugging onto Johnny Fever's legs. And Johnny Fever pats him on the head, and then he sort of lifts his hand and sort of glances down at it and rubs it on his jacket. Because obviously, I always find that funny. That was the one bit that tickled me. There was another bit, but I can't remember what it was. And then it's back to the... he's back in... So it cuts to him, actually. He's hugging Jennifer's legs in real life, which we'd all like to do. So that's a bonus. And then he's like, oh, where's my checkbook? And he starts writing out Christmas bonus checks for everybody because he's a changed man, and it's a wonderful ending. And he walks out of the room with his checkbook and ledger stuff, and Lonnie Anderson follows him. And as she does, oh, because Johnny Fever stood in the doorway, and as she leaves, she gives him a kiss on the lips and says, "Merry Christmas." And he says,
"God blesses everyone." And then he flips his coffee mug in the air and it freezes after that. I laughed when I saw that.
Did you really? You laughed?
Because the whole premise of that show was he was always trying to get together with Lonnie Anderson. He was always scheming to like kiss her, and it was not of this time. It was a little inappropriate. He was constantly pushing the envelope with her.
Oh, I see. Oh, it was like that. The proper 70s sexual harassment in the workplace, which was good back then. Apparently it's turned bad. But back in the old days, it was good. Yeah.
Yes.
We all miss those days. That's interesting. I sort of kind of figured that. So it wasn't like a proper, it wasn't like Jim and Pam on The Office. They didn't get together at the last episode or anything. No. Just creepy coworker who was always getting stoned at the office, and that was one of the jokes, the ongoing jokes, that he was always getting high. Yeah. Sorry, I should have said, actually, just as the boss, Mr. Coulson, is walking past Johnny Fever, he says,
listen, Fever, those brownies, I want them. Take those things over to Mother's house and I'll put one in her martini.
Which would be interesting, trying to drink a martini with a brownie in it. But that was, so that was the idea, was that he'd been spotted, and that's why he had this crazy dream. There we go, that was it. Oh, and then, as the credits roll, it's like the office party, and they're all dancing and chatting, and everyone's having a great time, but you can't hear what they're saying, because it's playing Jingle Bells, was it, over the top of it?
It was something, it was not the normal, they always had a standard outro music, and it wasn't that, it was just Christmas music.
Oh, is that right? They normally, oh, okay. Yeah, again, I never saw it. So, there was no boy in the street shouting Walker, sadly. What do you think of it all in? As being a fan of the show from the old days, what did you? And well, don't start trying to act cool. Going, oh, no, I thought it was rubbish. Just because I've said I thought it was rubbish, you got
to
say. Talk from the heart.
To me, like I said, tonally, Mr. Carlson wasn't a jerk. He wasn't like a mean boss. So they kind of changed him to a mean boss for this episode, which tonally was a little bit off. But I knew the characters, and I knew what their motivations were. So there were a couple moments that were funnier to me because I knew the characters.
Okay. That makes sense, I guess.
Like inside jokes that if you were along for the ride and plugging them into a Dickens story, you could find the humor in the fact that they played those different roles.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know.
You don't seem sold.
The problem is, it's the same with all these old sitcoms, really. None of them have stood the test of time much. They just don't make me laugh anymore. So I'm trying to think what I used to like in the old days. Nothing springs to mind. But I remember, here's an example. I remember loving The Dukes of Hazzard. I thought that TV show was fantastic. And then, probably about 12 years ago, I sat down and watched an episode, and I just thought it was complete trolley. And that was The Dukes of Hazzard, you know? So, yeah, then when you've got to watch a comedy and they're trying to make you laugh, I don't know.
From that same era, I think Cheers holds up. It's a couple of years later, but...
Yeah, Cheers was a bit later. Up. Yeah.
Cheers started in 82.
Oh, did it?
I think that show holds up pretty well.
Yeah, okay. I'll take it all back then. Maybe it's just the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, this was an inappropriate show. It was definitely of a time. But I think maybe Family Ties did a good job, in a sense, because they skipped Christmas Present, because they had nothing to say, and they wanted 22 minutes. And so they just skipped Present. They did Past, and then they did Future, and you got the gist, because you were already watching Present.
I don't think I've seen that one, but I think, was it you talking about it with Jerry?
Yes.
I listened to that about a year ago. You guys chatting about it, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I've watched it, because you guys told me all about it.
Because in 22 minutes, you have to make some quick choices. Like this episode, they just race through things because they were trying to get so much in. Trying to get Fezziwig in, trying to get
Marley's
ghost. So Family Ties, I thought, did a good job of just saying, he's a jerk to start the show. Here's the past. Here's the future.
Well, there we go, boys and girls. That was it. If you want to watch it, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to come around your house and pin you down and say, no, you shall not watch this. It's WKRP in Cincinnati, and it was on YouTube. So, yeah, it's called Bar Humbug, that episode. So, WKRP in Cincinnati, Bar Humbug. You won't have any trouble finding it. Yeah, give it a shot. You know, if you're a fan of the show, then, yeah, you know, it's something to watch at this time of year. Sorry. So, Ed, what is your happiest memory of this show? Actually, no, let's just do Gag Me With a Spoon.
You picking up Jerry's
yes, I was. I'm just kidding. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Well done though. Well done for spotting that. Yeah. You've been on his show a couple of times, haven't you?
Yes. I think I did about 6 months ago. I was on for a second.
Yeah, I heard
time.
It. I can't remember what it was though, but I definitely heard you again, yeah. Plug your book, Ed. Just before he does, I want to say I bought a copy last year and I read it in the summer, would you believe, of all times, and I really enjoyed it, and he's updated it. So tell us all about your book. Who's it by? And what's the title? And what's it's
by
in it?
By a guy I know named Ed Daly. It's called The Christmas Book, The Ultimate Guide to Your Favorite Holiday, and it's kind of an all-encompassing guide. It talks about the history. It talks about the history behind songs that we know, movies we know, movies we don't know, television shows, And then one of the parts I do is I rank over maybe 115 different Christmas Carol versions. This is in it somewhere on that list. But it's kind of, my book is kind of like your podcast, Total Christmas Podcast, because I'm...
Well, it's a shambles.
I'm trying to celebrate all things Christmas. It's not just about songs. It's not just about TV shows. It's trying to be everything. And so
it is, because you don't just cover the history of Christmas as well. You cover Christmas all around the world as well, which is something I try to do in the show. Yeah, there's so much in it, boys and girls. And it's one of those books you can just pick up, read a few pages, put it back down again. You know, it's really, as Christmas books go, and I've read loads, this one I really did enjoy. It's really well written. It's got a lot of humor in it, which is nice as well. So yeah, The Christmas Book by Ed Daly, available
this year. So it's got more pictures, more information. It's, I don't know, maybe 20 more pages. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
No, oh, well, but... okay. So get yourselves on Amazon, get a copy. While you're there, pick up a copy of Thursday Night's All Right by Jack Andrews. It's got a lot of swearing in, but it's a really good book. Thanks for coming on, Ed. You'll be on in the next episode or the episode after that, because he's going to have a go at the quiz. So see you then, Ed.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. Well, boys and girls, now it was supposed to be time for part three of our Christmas spooky story from Tony Dixon. But Tony's come down with COVID, so he's not been able to record the latest segment. So instead, what I'm going to do is another bit about books. I don't know if you remember, but last year I reviewed Seth's Christmas Ghost Stories by Biblioasis, and they've released some more books in the series this year. I'm just going to read out the blurb for you. Biblioasis is thrilled to continue this series of beautifully illustrated collectible books that share classic Christmas ghost stories with readers across the world. Seth, our world famous and beloved cartoonist, designs and illustrates each book in his own inimitable way, trimmed to fit the coziest stocking. And yeah, they've added three more books. So the first one is Shirley Jackson's A Visit, chronicling a young woman's visit to an eerie estate. The second one is Gertrude Atherton's The Dead and the Countess, where the construction of a railway results in unfortunate consequences for the residents of a nearby cemetery. And the third one is The Corner Shop by Lady Cynthia Asquith, in which a young man has strange dealings in an old antique shop. Now, what I love about these books is they're really a proper blast from the past, you know. It's similar to the story that Tony's been reading for us. They're really atmospheric, but they're sort of oldie-worldy as well. And these were the kind of ghost stories that they used to read to each other at Christmas time. So if you know someone who likes their spooky stories, then they'd make a perfect Christmas gift. They look lovely. The artwork is fantastic. And yeah, they're just a great read. I read a load last year. I've read a couple of these ones this year. And I highly recommend them if you're looking for something with that sort of yesteryear ghost story feel to it. So the name again is Biblioasis presents Seth's Christmas Ghost Stories. I highly recommend them. They're lovely little books. Do you know what? I could have just used those books as this week's recommendation, but I've got another book I want to recommend, and that is Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews. It's only available on Amazon Kindle, and it's very rude, lots of swearing, written 20 years ago by a very intelligent man. Yeah, I'm going to keep banging on about it in the hope that someone actually does get a copy. I think you'll find it funny, but you might also find it very offensive. Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a huge thank you to Brian L for coming on and being part of the podcast. I want to say a massive thank you to Ed Daly again for coming on and talking about this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. Thanks to Scott Newman for his attempt at the quiz, and of course my dear friend Bob Baker for his two segments. I really hope you've enjoyed the episode. I'll be back again. It won't be 2 weeks time, this one. The next one's going to be 8 or 9 days. It'll pop up in your feed if you subscribe. If you don't subscribe, well then it won't pop up, will it? You'll have to go looking for it. 8 or 9 days time, because I try to get 3 in December. I'll be looking forward to speaking to you then. I'll probably tell you more about my book. It's called Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews. And I'll be back then. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
What is all this? They're Christmas toys. Waiting for you. For me. What have they got to do with me? You're going to give them to your children.
There must be a mistake. We have no children.
You do now. You have all the children of the world.